This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Lots to get through today, lots to talk about. Before we start talking about hostage releases and things like that, today is, of course, International Holocaust Memorial Day. And we've had this discussion before about why the international community and particularly the United Nations decided that today should be the day rather than a day which coincides with our Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura, which takes place after Pesach. And the answer is that today is the day that Auschwitz extermination camp was liberated. This marks the liberation day of Auschwitz. And it's ironic that the international community has decided that the day on which they liberated Auschwitz is the day that we should mark International Holocaust Memorial Day, as opposed to the day that we've chosen in our calendar, Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura, which happens to coincide with the day on which we rose up in the Warsaw Ghetto. So the two dates, I think, stand in stark contrast to each other. And with the events of the last year and exacerbated by the comments made by the Irish president yesterday, I wonder how many listeners feel a little put out, feel a little uncomfortable, as I do, about today being Holocaust Memorial Day for the international community. I do agree that we need to mark the occasion and remember as much as we can, but it kind of just, to me, feels a little bit uncomfortable. Do you feel the same?
It's almost as though, as we see in social media, on social media all the time now, is that everybody's telling us what is or what isn't anti-Semitic. You know, they'll define what is anti-Semitic. Thank you very much. It's just an absurdity, Anthony. For those who don't know what the Irish Prime Minister said yesterday.
Well, the Irish president was at a ceremony which was marking International Holocaust Memorial Day, and then he chose to invoke Gaza, and he chose to talk about some of the things that have been taking place in Gaza and be critical of Gaza and events in Gaza. And I think that, when tying the two together, he thought that the two subjects really tied in with each other. And in some respects, I guess that they do, because one could argue that the Gaza war was precipitated by an anti-Semitic massacre, which took place on October the 7th. And therefore, as a result of that, we happen to be in this war in Gaza right now, on day 479 of our war. But the way that he spoke about it, and the way that he was critical of Israel's actions in Gaza, didn't really feel like it belonged with a day and a ceremony to mark atrocities committed against Jews. On the contrary, he was trying to sort of equivalate the two events, and it just kind of didn't really work at all, and was quite offensive. So that was the first thing that I wanted to mention. The second thing was just a comment that President Trump threw away about the fact that Gaza is a mess, and that Egypt and Jordan need to take people from Gaza and accommodate them while Gaza is rebuilt. And it sounded almost naive and a kind of a flippant statement, and it deserves quite a lot more discussion, which we don't have time for right now. But I just wanted to raise it up because I found it a very fascinating comment. And I think that there's a lot more thought and provocation behind what seems to be just a throwaway line, which really wasn't thought about and really doesn't have any logic. But I think that one could read a much, much deeper meaning into that throwaway line And I don't know whether he just threw it away and flippantly made the statement, or whether that came from some deeper thought and some desire to somehow provoke the reality of the situation, which is that Egypt and Jordan have absolutely no interest to accommodate the Gazans. As long as they stay in Gaza, Egypt and Jordan will support them as much as possible, but not one should step foot into either Egypt or Jordan. We can have that discussion at some other time.
Which is interesting in of itself. Talking about, of course, the big events over the weekend was the release of the four women hostages. Tell us how that played out.
So there's so many things that I want to say about the hostage release. First of all, the actual event that took place on Shabbat morning, which saw the release of four female hostages from Gaza, who were soldiers who were at the Nir Oz base as lookout soldiers. These are soldiers who are responsible for watching screens that have show footage from cameras that are mounted along the Gaza border. They are quite a well-known group of girls who do this job. Tatzpitanit, they are called Tatzpitaniyot in the plural, lookout soldiers. Their job is to look out. And ironically, they were the ones who raised the red flag quite early on, long before October the 7th, telling the authorities that there is some suspicious activity going on in the Gaza border, and tried to raise it up to quite senior levels, unsuccessfully, as it turns out. And they were the first ones in the line of fire when that base was overrun. And these four girls were captured, were taken hostage by Hamas, and ultimately were released on Saturday. And it was very emotional and very, very traumatic until the moment that we could see that they were really alive and well and, you know, supporting themselves, walking quite freely and looking actually quite healthy. First of all, they put on some sort of a parade in Gaza City, where the girls were paraded on a stage. They were dressed up in khakis to make it look like they were in their military uniforms. Let's not forget that these girls were captured in their pajamas, bloodstained. We saw the pictures of them being dragged into Gaza, not in military uniforms, as was presented to us on Saturday, but they were returned to us in sort of quasi-military uniforms to make clear that these are soldiers. And they were paraded on a stage in front of thousands of people, like some sort of an event. A Red Cross official came onto the stage and had to sign a release form, formally authorizing and verifying that they had been released. The four girls stood together very stoically, very bravely, smiling, the four of them holding hands with each other. They even had tags around their necks, which made it look like they'd been at a conference.
I was just thinking that.
Sort, you know?
To me, it looked like, you know, there they were in front of this, you know, on stage, as though they were representing Israel at this conference.
Yeah, it was just all just very bizarre indeed. But you know what? The most important thing is that they came home safely. They were ultimately flown into Beilinson Hospital in Petah Tikva. We hear so many stories, Howard, coming out from the hostages. And I'd like to just relate one or two of them. First of all, the amount of outpouring of love and support and the signs that have gone up across Israel and the people who've come out into the streets to celebrate the release of these hostages and the flags that are being flown and the number of people who were waiting around the helicopter landing pad at the hospital. Hundreds and thousands of people waiting for the helicopter to land so that they could show their love and appreciation for these girls who've obviously been through, you know, really, really been through a very, very tough time. But there are one or two little anecdotal stories which I think are worth just relaying to the listeners just to get some sort of an idea as to what's going on in Gaza. First of all, the conditions that they were kept in, you know, we keep being surprised again by some of the stories that we hear, the starvation that they've had to endure, drinking seawater. Who would imagine that they're going to have to drink seawater or cook and clean for the people that they're being held captive by, or being held in humanitarian zones that the IDF have set aside to hold people, to hold civilians, innocent civilians, and that's where some of our hostages were kept, even inside United Nations facilities. No shock there to any of us, but just a shock again to understand to what extent the United Nations, the money that countries are pouring into the United Nations and to UNRWA to support the work that's being done by UNRWA, and that money and those investments are being used to hold our hostages when they are taken from Gaza. They're taken into Gaza. We understand that these girls, they all looked quite well looked after, but we understand that the conditions that they were kept in were very, very basic, very few medical facilities, and as I say, you know, food and basic humanitarian conditions really not applying. And yet they looked quite good when they came out. And one of the stories that I've read is that before the hostages are released, they actually put them on some sort of a program to help them to look a little healthier. They might even give them some drugs, they feed them, they give them supplements, they try to help them look healthier so that at that moment when they can parade them on the stage with their tags, the world can see that Hamas is some sort of a humanitarian organization that keeps hostages healthy and well. So far, fortunately, our hostages have walked home by themselves on their own steam, and of course have been reunited with their families. Still many left behind, and therein lie some of the stories as well. A story about Emily Damari, who was held for some of the time at least with her neighbor Keith Siegel. Keith is 65 years old from Kibbutz Kfar Aza. The Siegel and the Damari families are neighbors at Kibbutz Kfar Aza, and Emily and Shir Siegel grew up together. They were like in each other's homes. And Keith remains in Gaza still today, who is in very poor health. His wife Aviva was already released previously. Mm. And we understand that Emily Damari, when she understood that she was being released, asked for her to stay in Gaza and rather for Keith to be released, because she felt that he was in much poorer condition than her. And she asked her Hamas captors if they would rather allow Keith to come home instead of her. In the end, that wasn't the case. And we're very hopeful that Keith will be in the next group of hostages. We understand he's in very poor health and that we hope that he will come home soon. Just another story about Agam Berger. She is the one IDF soldier, a female soldier, who still remains in Gaza. Everybody had hoped that the five soldiers would come home together. Agam has been kept in Gaza, and again, we hope that she will be in the next group to be released. But we spoke last week about the hair braiding, and we understand that Agam is the secret hair braider. She is the one who braids the hair and who braided the hair of some of the girls who came home. Mm. She's been kept in Gaza. We understand that Agam is also religiously observant, and that as an act of defiance, when she was asked to cook for her Hamas captors on Shabbat, she refused to do so.
Wow.
Agam Berger.
And I just wonder, what a character. What a strength.
I just wonder whether she might have been kept back because of that defiance that she showed, that lack of willingness to go along with what she was ordered to do. But we understand that Agam tried to do whatever she could to maintain her faith and to maintain her adherence. And on Shabbat, she refused to cook for her Hamas captors. That is quite a story, and I think that from Agam, we're going to hear some more.
Yeah.
Now, what happened on Saturday was that the agreement was not adhered to, because the agreement said, the hostage release agreement said, that the civilians would be released first. And one of the civilians who is still in Gaza is Arbel Yehud. She, we understand, is alive and being held by Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And she was supposed to have been released before the soldiers, but she wasn't. So the Israeli government decided to use one of its levers that it has at its disposal and refused to allow the Gazans to go over the Netzarim corridor and to go to northern Gaza, which they were supposed to be allowed to do after the release of the hostages on Saturday. And Prime Minister Netanyahu said, I'm sorry, even though these hostages were released, you didn't adhere to the agreement. There are two things that weren't agreed, that weren't adhered to. One is that Arbel, who is a civilian, was not released, and that is not according to the agreement. And the second part of the agreement was that the list of the remaining 26 hostages would be released with their state of health, with how they're doing, who's alive, who's dead, who's, you know, what's happening with all of those. And that was also not released. And as a result of that, the flow of Gazans to the north across the Netzarim corridor was stopped. And thousands of Gazans were gathered at the Netzarim corridor trying to cross, and they were not allowed to do so. And we heard a video footage of some of them saying, Arbel Yehud, that is the Arbel that has been kept back. And ironically, her surname is Yehud, or Yehud, of course, being Jew in Arabic. Arbel Yehud is stopping us from crossing over to the north of Gaza. This was the chatter amongst those thousands of Gazans who were waiting to cross over. They all knew that Arbel was the one who was stopping them from crossing over. That was just well known on the ground at the Netzarim corridor. We understand this morning that an agreement has been reached that Agam, Arbel, and Keith will be released on Thursday, this Thursday now, which is an extra release which wasn't originally anticipated. And that is not instead of the hostages who were due to be released on Saturday. So we will have two releases this week, one on Thursday and one on Saturday. We understand that the list of the remaining 26 hostages has now been provided along with their general state of health. The information has not been released to the public, but the IDF spokesman did say over the weekend that we are extremely concerned about the fate of the Bibas family.
Yeah,
That was some sort of a preparation, I think, for us to understand that they are not in good shape. So that is the current state. So I understand that this morning the Netzarim corridor has been opened and that Gazans are now crossing over to the north of Gaza as a result of the agreement to release Arbel, to release Agam, and to release Keith on Thursday, and to furthermore release the next group on Saturday. And of course, we have received the list. So that's what we can fit in for today. Wow. Still a lot more to talk about, but hopefully we will have a chance to do so.
Absolutely, absolutely right, Anthony Reich. Thank you. As always, you can catch Anthony Reich tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.